laughter is a good medicine. So we'll replay the speed jokes at 1:38. Steve, you've actually worked with me on those. Do you know what the first date was of speed jokes, by the way?
No. I have to check on that.
It's March, though, right?
Yeah, March something.
John Beaver's going to join us in a minute. He is the financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. We're gathering him on the phone. Pete says he'll be on with us in just a second. But it's interesting to see what's happening to the markets around the world. We'll talk to him about that. What is happening right now in the Dow and so forth?
Let's talk about Russia. Yeah. Russia's stock exchange dropped by about 50% today. European stocks 3% lower for most European stocks. The German stock exchange was down over 4%. Big banks, the bank stocks in Europe were down 8 to 10% today. Anything connected to Russia in any way, and of course more companies in Europe are related to business in Russia than are over here, I suppose. But those are all suffering, at least in terms of share price today.
And so you suppose that's a good thing, right? That's the idea. I don't know if that's as a result of the war or a result of the sanctions, but since we're not going to send troops, you hope that maybe you can bring financial pressure to bear. But to what end, too, right?
Well, imagine that initially it's a response just to the invasion, the attack on Ukraine. Traders don't like uncertainty, and that sure throws a lot of uncertainty into a lot of things because, you know, while Russia is not a huge economy, it does export a lot of precious metals, a lot of wheat, natural gas to Europe, all of those things. In any company related to that, and I mentioned the banks, the ruble has tumbled, the dollar's much higher. So all of this winds up with the traders looking at this, say, I better get out of this and put it into gold or someplace else.
Gold is up today, I presume?
Yep. Gold's a one-year high. It's up about $1,923 an ounce.
Now we have on the phone line John Beaver, Phase 3 Advisory Services. John, join the conversation. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, it's good to be here. We're praying for those Ukrainians.
Aren't we all? What else do you want to add to what my colleague Steve Alexander was saying?
Well, a couple of things. The first thing is on these invasions, the market has a checkered past of what it actually does on those days and when we go back in history. So sometimes it's almost no effect, as such as the Crimea. And Georgia's situation, which was in 2008, that actually came in the middle of the financial crisis, so it's really hard to know what to say there. The market actually rallied on that one. Iraq invading Kuwait, we had a 21% decline over 2 months, and then we can go back in history and see others. But it's kind of checkered, so that doesn't give us a lot of clues. What's really more important is what's going on in the economy at the time and in the markets to see whether the invasion is a trigger for the downside or if it really isn't an event. And in this case, it's a trigger to the downside because the market has been vulnerable.
How long do you think then this lasts?
Nobody knows. But I think it's going to be a while, and that's because of the environment that we're in. The three key concerns that the market looks at are inflation, growth, and what's going on with the Fed. And none of those are a good picture right now because inflation is heating up. This invasion could potentially create more inflation on the commodity side. Growth is going to be slowing in the U.S. for a couple of reasons. Number one, possibly more higher inflation. The inflation that we have right now is also having a little bit of a limiting effect.
Fuel costs will be higher, won't they?
Exactly, right. And then Fed tightening. So the Fed might not be taking money off the table, but they are raising rates, and that's a tightening cycle. And this tightening cycle will probably last for quite a while. What we don't know, and even the Fed doesn't know, is how quickly are they going to act on this. But those are definitely all longer-term headwinds for the markets. I think the market could very easily make a lower low. We are in correction territory for the NASDAQ, down 20% this morning on the open. We're down 12% on the close yesterday on the S&P 500, so that's no big crash yet at this point in time. I'm not expecting that either. But we do get an average as much as 20% correction in midterm years also, and this is a midterm year, so we have a lot of headwinds for the market.
We normally get a 20% uptick in the markets?
Actually, 20% correction in midterm years. So every year on average, the market will pull back 10-12%. So right now on the S&P 500, we're just looking at kind of a normal pullback at this point in time. This could be all that there is, but volatility indicates we'll probably have at least one more push lower. And that wouldn't be unusual just because it's a midterm year, and then you add in the invasion. So this is not something to be fearful of. This is actually, in my opinion, creating some opportunity only for longer-term investors, maybe not short-term investors yet.
Well, I wonder about the term, right? Because I don't suppose the Russia's going to pull out of Ukraine anytime soon. So if any of these factors that you listed are exacerbated by what's happening over there, there's no end in sight, no relief in the near term, that's for sure.
No, and I think we have to operate on the under the assumption that they just take it. You know, think about this. It's really always about the money. So it's Ukraine's resources, the whole country. It's large. I think it's the second largest landmass in all of Europe, Europe. You know, uranium, titanium, manganese, iron ore. They're number two in the world for iron ore, nickel. That's going to create more strain on chips. Wheat, sunflower, I think they're number one or number two on sunflower. I didn't even realize that. Barley, corn. So overall, they're the second world's largest natural gas pipeline system and number fourth in the world for all of natural resources. So it's, you know, what's Putin's intent here? We don't know, but I just take a look at the money side, and he'd love to have Ukraine.
We'll pause here and come back with John Beaver in just a minute. Financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. Let's go back into the WGN Radio Newsroom. They won't give you a free steak, but tell them you heard it here anyway. John Beaver's on a phone line. He is the financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. Phase3advisory.com is their website. That three is a number in the middle. And John's been talking to us a little bit about what's happening on the markets because of the Russian invasion of Kuwait. And you said that the headwinds that the markets... Say it again. I said Kuwait,
headwinds
didn't
for the
I?
Market.
Yeah,
inflation.
But I think I said the wrong country. Let's
did,
get that right. Yeah, I don't know where that came from. Although I was looking at a list of invasions. So you mentioned the headwinds, interest, growth, the Fed, things to be concerned about. And you were also talking about how the market expects that this Ukraine situation is going to be ongoing, right?
I think so. I think the market is dealing with that. But I still think the bigger issue, it's really the Fed policy. You know, this invasion is going to affect commodities worldwide, I believe. It could go on for quite a while. But we'll get through this. It's really what does the Fed do? Does this slow up what the Fed is going to do? Are they going to raise rates slower than they were anticipating? This certainly takes a half a point increase off the table. My guess is for March they're only going to increase 0.25%, and then they're going to sit back and see how things go. They're still extremely accommodative. Anytime you have the short-term rates below the inflation rate, and let's forget the 7.5% inflation rate print last month. Let's say we're averaging 3. We still have short-term rates substantially below that, and the 10-year Treasury is even below that 3%. So the Fed is still extremely accommodative, and they've really backed themselves into a corner. They've waited too long. We do believe that they are behind the curve. They've waited too long to raise rates. So now when the shock hits, you know, they're between a rock and a hard place. If they raise rates too much, they could choke off the economy. If they don't, we'll have inflation, more inflation, and inflation will itself choke off the economy. So that's the challenge ahead of us. For that reason, we've been de-risking shorter-term money the last couple of months. Longer-term money, we still see this now as a buying opportunity. Although the market is not cheap yet, it's getting down to where its normal valuation should be, in our opinion.
So what should people be poised to buy then?
Good question. So these declines do breed opportunities. Recessions are the best. So if we could predict whether this is going to lead to a recession or not, that would help us know on the timing. But we still really like high-quality, cash-flow-rich companies. And this is what we call value companies. And this shift from the high-growth companies with no earnings to these more boring companies, this shift could take a couple of years. And it's a pendulum that swings back and forth. 10 years on the growth side, 10 years on the value side. Just kind of think that as a guideline. We've got 12 years of growth beating value. So the rubber band is really stretched. We think there's a lot of opportunity for value buyers. Short term, we could get a growth pop here, especially if the Fed pulls back on the interest rate increase. That's where the primary opportunity is.
John, you were describing for us before the break the resources that Ukraine has. All of that you were describing, that wasn't Russia, that was Ukraine you were telling us about?
Yeah, that's Ukraine.
That was absolutely stunning, both agricultural and mineral resources. So you can see how attractive that is to Putin. But I wonder what the consequences would be. That is, if we said we're not going to do business with Ukraine or Russia if Russia absorbs Ukraine, if they control Ukraine, then I wonder what the pinch would be for us here in the USA. Would the cost of bread go up? Would the cost of wristwatches or computers go up?
So that's going to be commodity by commodity, depending on what we have access to here. So, you know, we're big wheat producers. But I'm more concerned about the metals, and especially the metals that are necessary for chip production. And why wouldn't Putin want to have a good control on that? I think he would want to. I mean, Russia, think of Russia as a superstore in commodities, and they're just adding to that at this point in time.
Yeah, but I'm thinking we will not do business nor trade with countries that do with Russia. So
well,
we wouldn't have access temporarily.
Yeah, temporarily. Eventually, you know, the money always wins out. If the price gets too high, we'll eventually do business with them.
Well, that's not the way we're talking today. You know, and but seriously, you think, well, we're not going to send troops, so by golly, we'll exert such economic force on them that they'll regret the day they did it. But you think Putin would be very patient about that, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he's counted the cost. He's not doing this on a lark. He's thought about this. He's probably talked with China about this.
Well, they said they would continue to do business with Russia.
So, you know, he's figured out what he needs to do if he does this move, and he's shut out of the world system for a little bit. He's figured out what he's going to do about this. That's not something that he's going to figure out on the way. So, and because of that, you know, it's interesting. Do sanctions work? History shows maybe not so much. Maybe what it does is it kind of keeps things from getting worse, but is it going to improve the situation? That there's just no way of telling. I'm really glad I'm not President Biden.
Well, no kidding, because then what else do you have? I mean, sending in troops seems even less attractive, and NATO's in no rush to do that either. You almost want to thank your lucky stars that Ukraine is not part of NATO right now, because then we'd all be obligated.
Right.
So we don't send in troops. And you think that it's going to be too expensive for economic sanctions to take a long run. So there you sit.
Yep.
If you're president of the United States, you have few options right now. What else should we be paying attention to in the markets today then?
So, you know, as we work through this thing, and again, this is the headline of the day, right? We try and keep people from not looking at the headline of the day, but really look out. Look out 3, 6, 9 months. What people should be watching. You know, things such as housing permits. What's going on with housing? You know, we are short 2.5 million units, housing units in the U.S. But the baby boomers, the millennials, we're down. We need 5 million units. There's going to be a lot of demand there. So I'd watch that to see if that pulls back at all. I'd watch ISM new orders. But the real thing that I would continue to watch is the Fed's response to inflation. And higher rates are going to pressure housing prices. Higher construction costs could pressure that. So that's why I think housing is an important piece to watch.
Can you just, I know we talked about this with various guests earlier in the pandemic, but when the housing stock seemed to shrink so quickly, people had been living somewhere. What happens to a housing stock? How can you be down 5 million houses?
So it used to be builders would build ahead of demand. They would build spec houses. Then the financial crisis hit, and the financial crisis, everybody got hurt. And so builders learned, okay, well, I'm not going to build ahead. And people stopped buying. They stopped borrowing. And so we got way behind in our need for building housing units. Plus, people were piling more people into a house. Millennials were not starting household formation. From what I've read, they're about 10 years behind in household formation. All of a sudden, all that seems to catch up all at once in the last couple of years, and COVID had an impact on that, too. And actually, it looks like a lot of millennials were like, okay, that's it. I'm getting out of the house, and I'm going to go live on my own. And so it's a perfect storm that's happened in the housing. So what typically happens with builders is they're behind the curve. Then they will end up overbuilding. We'll have to see if in this cycle they end up overbuilding again. But that I don't see that risk for several years out.
COVID doesn't seem to be driving the markets like it used to, does it?
Not at all.
That kind of just quietly happened, didn't it? Because before Omicron, I would say it was still a driving factor.
Yeah, and Omicron ended up being a blessing in that it's not severe and it continues to spread immunity. So that's a good thing, and it's no longer the headline of the day.
Well, and we're coming out of the, you know, come March 1st, we won't have to even wear a mask, let alone be vaccinated to go about in public. Do you anticipate any ripple as a result of that? Will restaurants or businesses prosper as a result?
I think people have already gone back to doing what they're going to do. People that can't eat in the restaurant, they carry out. So there will be some. What we're seeing overall, and apart from just the last couple of days, is that travel and entertainment looks like that's where money is being spent, and especially internationally, a lot of demand for international flights. Now, this could change in the next couple of days, but at least that's the trend that we would expect to continue.
John Beaver, financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services, phase3advisory.com. Yeah, real interesting stuff today. John, thanks for your time. Thanks for your help.
Great to be with you.
It's 1227. WGN Radio News is next.